Hey, Eagle. This is Dennis DeYoung.
How are you, Dennis? Good morning.
How are you?
I'm good.
You sound like you're inside a Yankee Stadium.
Yes, we have a lot of reverb on our microphone. It's a harken back to the 80s top 40 days.
WLS,
Chicago. So I'm excited to have you here on the show. I grew up with Styx.
So did I.
Yes, you did.
Yeah.
And I want to talk about those early days, you know, even before Styx became a band.
Okay.
When
we were a soccer team.
Yes, you were a soccer team, and you grew up in Chicago, and I have a special place in my heart for Chicago. My family's from Chicago before they moved here to Dayton, Ohio.
Where are they from?
They were North Chicago.
Okay.
Not far from Wrigleyville, so we were, you know, big Cub fans.
Oh, yeah.
And my dad went to Northwestern. And
he's a smart guy.
Yeah, he is a smart guy.
What happened to you?
Exactly. It didn't take. I'm adopted, actually, Dennis. So
I don't want no excuses to make that.
That's my defense. But then my grandpa was also a conductor on the L for a number of years.
Oh, I'll be doggone.
Back in the.
Want to hear something crazy?
What's that?
I've lived in Chicago 70 years. I've never been on the L one time in my life.
Really?
Never.
You got to do that at least once, don't you?
I'll consider it if there's money involved.
If there's money. Well, talk about those early days in the 60s before Styx became Styx. You lived in, you know, just this amazing city with all this great music and lots of clubs, lots of places to play. What was that like?
Well, we started out, I was 14, and the Panazzo brothers, who formed the band with me in my basement in 1962, were kids. And, you know, we just happened to live on the same block, and I played accordion. Because my mother was Italian, and that was the law. We formed a little band. This is before the Beatles. And there really weren't rock bands, so to speak, before the Beatles in that way. Most rock and rollers were solo artists. So we were just playing what they call standards, you know, music from the 50s, 40s, 60s, and trying to get jobs playing weddings. So we were like a little wedding band when we first started out. And we stayed that way for quite a while until we saw the Beatles, which was, like, for me 3 years later. And then I said, oh, that looks like a good job. But we were just kids, occasionally played a high school dance, but mostly we were a wedding band. And then with the advent of the Beatles and rock bands, we slowly transformed ourselves into a rock band. But, you know, those are really probably, if I look back at it, those were probably the happiest times of my life as a musician, because the minute you do something, as you know, Todd, professionally, regardless of whatever the dream is, the minute you start doing it for real, the dream becomes a reality.
Right.
And at some point, it really is a job. It might be the greatest job in the world, but still, it is a job.
I agree totally. I have no musical ability, really. I can sing a little bit, but not to the level that, you know, to make it as a professional. But when I was in high school, instead of being in a band, I had a little radio station in my bedroom, and that's all I ever wanted to do. And as much fun as I have doing this show and other shows and in the past, the most excitement was just firing that thing up in my bedroom, playing all the records that I wanted to play, nobody telling me what to do. You're exactly right. That's when it's the most fun. And all the
because it's only fun.
Yeah, that's right. And then, you know, as you get into Styx and other bands, you get into the business side of it, and that's when it becomes a bit of a headache.
Well, it's, you know, the minute you become a professional, it is a business, and then all sorts of other things come into play, contracts and obligations. But when you're just out there, you know, hey, let's play. We're going to play next week. We have a gig. Oh, my God, we have one gig a month. Oh, this is exciting. And then it's just, you know, it's fun, fun, fun. So those are the happiest days. Not that there haven't been happy days when you're a professional, certainly for someone of my of the length of my career who's had the success that I've had. It's not like it's a, you know, it's not like driving nitroglycerin around the country in a truck.
That's right.
It's a good job.
Yeah.
And it's a wonderful way, because look, I'm a lucky man. Listen, I guarantee you, when I come to your city, there will be people who will come up to me and when they see me and thank me for coming, as if I'm there doing charity work.
Right.
So it's an amazing thing, and they're happy to share their memories of their lives with me in the ways that the music that I help create, you know?
Right.
To be at this age and have this kind of thing. You know, most people my age, you know, people are looking to get rid of him. How do we get rid of this guy? He's been here too long. But, you know, it's been really, it's been a charmed life when it comes to my profession. And I thank all the people who helped support this habit all these years.
Right. When Styx did become Styx, I think it was like 70, 71, somewhere in there. What was the process that you and the other guys in the band kind of went through to sort of figure out who you were as a band?
I've said this before, but I didn't know anything. I when we got a record deal, I wasn't even really a songwriter. So I just made it up, Todd, as I went along and faked out a lot of people. I kept pretending. I kept telling them I knew something and I didn't know anything. And doggone it, people believed me. So I kept pretending. And Styx, you know, when you're talking about figuring yourself out, you know, musically, there's different elements in every band. There's more than one guy. And you come together and you make a sound, magically, because it's really dependent on the human beings that are playing those instruments and singing those notes. And what happens is you come together with one thing in mind, you know, because we came together originally, we were like a top 40 cover band. And, you know, we did all kinds of stuff. You know, we did everything from Led Zeppelin and Jethro Tull, right, to the latest pop hit, just to get hired. And then when you have to start writing your own music, well, at the time, in 1970, when the original members all came together for the first time, a lot of us enjoyed the progressive music movement that was really taking hold. And so we were more of a fake prog band for a while. For many albums, we had a lot of prog overtones in what we did. But at heart, you know, I think we were a song band. In other words, you start with the best song you can, and then you arrange it any way you like. And over time, I guess a particular sound developed. But think about this, Todd. If I played your Renegade and Babe and Mr. Roboto, you wouldn't think they were from the same band, would you?
No, and that's one of the things that I love about Styx, is that the sound was very versatile. You know, it wasn't just one thing over and over and over and over, which many bands do, and many bands have success, but...
You know what, they appeal to that part of the audience, and there is a substantial a part of the audience that likes one thing for the most part.
Right.
And they're not giving it up.
Right.
They can be 70 years old, and they're still doing the same thing. You know, for me... personally, it's too constricting, too confining, artistically stultifying. I believe this. It's the song, the song, the song. The reason I can still come around at my age is not because people are happy to see me on Medicare. They're thrilled to hear those songs.
Right.
It means something to them. And the better songs you have, the better off you are. So as kind of the pseudo-leader of the band, I really stress, let's get the very best songs on these records, and we'll worry about, you know, the stylization. In terms of style, we'll arrange them as a band, and we'll play them, and it will be Styx.
In 1981, you guys put out Paradise Theater, and then 83, Kilroy was here. Concept albums, and that was kind of a big thing in the 60s and the 70s and into the early 80s, and then it kind of went away. And then a couple of years ago, Green Day, of all bands, kind of brought that thought back of doing a concept album. The thing that I always loved about concept albums is it really was kind of this great journey that the band took you on. You know, here's this entire piece of work to sort of, you know, communicate that message.
Yeah, I think, you know, the concept albums that I was involved with were you know, all, and so all Styx concept albums came from me. The Grand Illusion, of course, Pieces of Eight, Paradise Theater, and Kilroy. So I was the concept guy.
Right.
I only did it to keep us from writing more songs about, you know, meeting girls backstage, if you know what I mean.
No, I got you.
And those of us were big rock stars. I literally told our audience, don't be fooled by us. Don't be fooled by the radio in 1977 with the Grand Illusion, by telling the audience specifically that we are here creating illusion for your entertainment and perhaps edification. But bottom line, we're just like you. Deep inside, we're all the same. I don't think any rock band ever did that other than us. We came right out on several of our songs and said, you know, we were the kids sitting in the 14th row just a few years ago.
Right.
And so that was my influence on the band in terms of concept albums. If you didn't like the concept thing, well, blame me. But you know, I did it a lot. So now I'm making a new record, and we're writing it. And here's it's a concept album as well. I hope you like it. The concept can really be, what I think, it can be summed up in two words, and that's don't suck.
Right.
That's my concept.
Yeah.
At this point, you know, I want to get the best collection of songs on a record for people and see if they'll be happy to have it.
Right. Into the 80s, you know, there was a lot of drama with Styx, and into the 90s, and then I don't want to go into all that because it's all over the internet, and if people want to, you know, learn about that, they are more than happy to. But one of the things that I'm most interested in, Dennis, is your acting.
Yeah, you know how much drama there was in the band in 1983? I was played by Susan Lucci. That tells you something. I tell you, those gowns are heavy. They don't look heavy, but they weigh a lot. What was the question?
Oh, I'm curious your acting.
Well, what we did in Kilroy, I don't know, you know, we called it acting, but I wouldn't want to put it up for a vote. Although I think wasn't I nominated for an Oscar? Probably not. But I did some acting in 93 when I played Pontius Pilate in Jesus Christ Superstar. I toured North America and did it. I ended up doing it in New York and performed like 260 times as Pontius Pilate.
Oh, wow.
That's plenty.
That is plenty.
That's enough crucifying for a lifetime.
But it's kind of a remarkable thing. Years ago, I was in a musical. It's the only musical I've ever been in. I was in Oliver, and I played Mr. Bumble, this big, fat, bumbling guy.
That's right. More pudding.
Yes, more pudding. Yes, sir. And but it was just the most exhilarating experience I think I'd ever had on stage. And now I haven't been in a band like you, but is there something, would you like to do more of that? Or was that just kind of a one-off thing and you're happy with what you've done?
After I did it, I had offers to, you know, to do more stuff on Broadway. And you know what? I found that I really enjoyed it, but they do perform 8 shows a week. And I think there are only 7 days in the week.
Yeah.
I thought, listen, you got to, hats off to the people who do Broadway. These guys, they work. And if you're in a musical and you're a singer, you're working, dude. Because, you know, you really almost have no other life. Because you have to take care of yourself to perform every night. You know, there's 2 matinees.
Right.
It's really, really a very disciplined sort of profession. I'm in a rock band. Why would I want discipline? This is fun.
Well, right. You know, and the other thing, too, is being in a rock band, you probably get so much from the audience. You know, it drives you and compels you to perform at a even greater level because you want to relate and connect with them. And I would imagine the difference between a rock crowd and a theater crowd is quite different, you know.
Listen, as Pontius Pilate, I didn't get go out and say, hey, Cleveland, how you doing? Good to see you.
That's
funny,
right.
Thing happened to me on the way to Judea. No, that doesn't happen.
Right.
You have a script, you have a mark, you have, you know, with actors, the whole thing has to be seamless for it to work. So rock and roll can, you know, stop in the middle of the song and, you know, run in the back and drink a beer if they want to.
Right.
But that doesn't happen in the theater. It's a very, very disciplined sort of profession.
Tell us about the podcast. You know, we're excited to have the Dennis DeYoung Come Sail Away podcast here on the Eagle.
Yeah.
And you can listen to it at eagledayton.com. And I was actually listening to a few of your most recent shows, and you were talking about the difference between a stylist and a singer. And I thought that was incredibly interesting because I sort of have the same view.
The point I was trying to make is there are people who sing for a living, essentially in rock bands, who are what I not real singers in the traditional sense that you put something in front of them and they can sing it. They're stylist guy, and I mentioned specifically guys like Mick Jagger or Bob Dylan, who write their own music, but they don't really sing things outside of their very narrow stylistic way that they approach music. But I was making the point in rock and roll, there are great singers who could sing anything. They
right.
could sing the rock, they could sing the ballad, they could sing anything, like they say, could sing the phone book. And I mentioned Elvis at the top of that list. And
oh,
I
definitely.
Mentioned my 5 favorite singers of all time in popular music. And that was just something that I thought I wanted to talk about. For instance, I was making the point, there are great singers in every medium. For instance, opera singers, as we all know, they sing opera. You ever try to sing opera? This is not for children.
No, it's not. No.
This is big time singing. But if you ever heard an opera singer try to sing anything else, it doesn't sound right. So these are, I think what I said in that podcast, if I had a chance to redo it, I'd say, well, there are specific singers that, for instance, like Sinatra, that sing their thing. And, you know, you don't want to hear Sinatra sing Honky Tonk Woman. And you really don't want to hear Mick Jagger sing Come Fly With Me. You just don't want to hear that.
Yeah, several years ago, I don't know if you're aware of this, but Pat Boone put out a heavy metal album. He did some covers of, like, Crazy Train, and I think he might have done a Rolling Stones cover. And it was rough to listen to. He sounded fine musically. You know, his tone was fine. His voice was fine, but Pat Boone singing,
yeah,
come on, it's a crazy train. You know, it's like, what?
Although I saw him in leather once, and I ruined my whole week. But
yeah.
The thing that I really like, the people I respect the most are people who just seem to be able to sing almost anything. And Elvis was part of that group, and I put McCartney and I think Stevie Wonder in there, and Tom Jones. And then I threw in Johnny Mathis, but that was for a different reason. Because Johnny was, when I was a kid and an adolescent, and first playing Spin the Bottle and kissing girls for the first time, we couldn't wait to put on a Johnny Mathis record and slow dance, because that's the only way you had to touch girls in those days. I think Johnny Mathis can't sing Johnny Be Good either, but he has a warm place in my heart for my puberty.
Right, right.
Let's not deny puberty, Todd, seriously.
I understand. So this Friday night, you're going to be at the Phrase here in Dayton, Ohio, with Blue Oyster Cult.
Yes, absolutely, and I'm not going to fear the cowbell.
That is a legendary band as well.
They've
been around
guys.
Forever.
Buck Diamond and the boys, good guys. And listen, you don't have to fear the Reaper. Go there and listen to it.
Yeah, it's one of our exclusive Eagles shows. So,
it sounds like a marriage made in the 70s.
It does, yeah. It does.
Yeah, no, listen, we're going to have a heck of a good time. You're going to hear every Sticks hit, one right after another. Lady B, Best of Times, Come Sail Away, Don't Let It, and Show Me the Way, Mr. Roboto, Renegade, Blue Collar Man, Too Much Time, you name it.
Dennis, I really appreciate you taking the time to chat with us today.
Oh, my pleasure. And hey, kids, go to my podcast on your station there, the Eagle, and listen, I might say something to make you laugh. That's the point.
Check it out at eagledayton.com.
Thanks, buddy.